Welcome to the Keys of the Kingdom with Brother Gregory of His Holy Church.
Well, welcome to Keys of the Kingdom. I'm Brother Gregory, and we're going to talk again about the Kingdom of God, and going to start with a particular topic today that is a little bit part of the continuation of resist no evil. And that idea of resisting no evil and circle makers is really tied hand in hand. Resist no evil, there's a peculiar thing that takes place spiritually, and the evidence of that spiritual reality is often on an emotional level. And then because the emotions is a very strong power in the lives of mankind, it often manifests itself in a physical level. I've seen numerous videos sent to me about police brutality or brutality of people where someone gets mugged or mobbed or brutalized by someone, and it's particularly heinous when it's done by someone who is actually, his job is to protect and to serve, such as a police officer, and we're outraged by that. But the reality is every citizen in almost every country, generally speaking, brutalizes every other citizen in almost every other country, in every country, and even in neighboring countries, because we live in socialist states. Almost every country is socialist. The United States has become a socialist state. Canada certainly is. England certainly is. And many of the benefits that we depend upon and we require in this socialist state that we have created in the individual terrains and countries across the world, brutalize one another because they take from one another. They have elected men who exercise authority, and those men take from one another to provide the benefits that we have become so dependent upon, from education to health care to the police itself. The police itself is a socialist product because you force everybody to pay into a common purse. And because everything everybody owns is in a common purse, so therefore you have the right to tax the individual in order to make him pay in to finance the police, just like you finance education or finance health care. It's all based on the idea that you must force your neighbor to contribute to the welfare of one another. And then you give certain men the power to decide how much they're going to give and how much they're going to keep, and how much they're going to share with the people, and who's going to get what. And those men who exercise authority also get to decide how much you're going to give. And we see that in every country around the world, almost completely, exclusively in every single country, to lesser or greater degrees. And yet that's not the norm for man's history. The norm for man's history is voluntary societies. Yes, often those societies are very small, they're clans or tribes, but the fact is what you gave and whether you were going to go to war or not or what you're going to get back was an individual choice of the people, for the people, by the people, and that's what a government of the people, for the people, and by the people is. Anything else where you elect someone, whether it's Cain or Nimrod or Pharaoh or Caesar, to take from the citizenry and redistribute what they take for the benefit of society, that's not a government of the people, for the people, and by the people directly. Indirectly, it is. Indirectly, they choose. They create these institutions with their own hands, usually by signing some sort of document. But by their hands, they create these institutions, and they end up having to bow down and serve those institutions. And those institutions, according to Samuel 8, will take and take and take and take and take. And then there'll come a day where you cry out, but God will not hear you, because the fact that you created such an institution, according to the Bible, if you go read Samuel 8, is a rejection of God, even if it's done by the voice of the people, especially if it's done by the voice of the people. It's different if, you know, pirates come in and take over and make you pay into their pirate government. Because then theoretically, if you got a chance to become free, you could. But if you choose to create such institutions, and those institutions go into debt especially, then you and all your children will remain subject, like you were in Egypt. You were in debt in Egypt because they bailed you out when the famine came. So you were in bondage to the Pharaoh. You agreed to it. You said, yeah, we'll pay one-fifth in of everything that we produce during a given year. Our labor, one-fifth of our labor belongs to you now, forever. And we will work for you, bow down and serve you, but you've got to feed us through this famine. And of course, this came about because the one man who could have told them to prepare for the famine, they threw into slavery. And it wasn't because God couldn't have provided for them had they kept David at, Joseph at home, but it was because of their jealousy and envy that they were willing to throw their own brother into servitude. Because of that jealousy and envy, that they themselves went into bondage. And of course, this is the principle that's followed throughout history, that when the people, the voice of the people, are willing to put everybody under bondage of some ruler who exercises authority, they themselves will go under that ruler. And according to Samuel 8, he will take and take and take and take until you cry out and God won't even hear you. So anyway, that's the principle. But now how does that play out in our day-to-day lives besides, you know, the overall scheme of things? Because, see, Israel wasn't that kind of government that was set up by Moses, who was evidently listening to God and who evidently was in agreement with Jesus, because Jesus and Moses are even seen together talking. And that idea of having a government of the people, for the people, and by the people, operating by free will offerings. Even though that's what it talks about in the Old Testament, under Moses, free will offerings, free will offerings, free will offerings, over and over again, in support of the government. And the very first foolish act of a king, which was the result of the foolish act of the people, electing a king, but the very first act that was called foolish, which was the reason his kingdom would not stand, was when he forced an offering of the people in order for a good cause. But when he forced that offering for the people, he was told that his kingdom would not stand because he violated the law, because he forced an offering. Now, that was legal, but it was against God's law. And so, therefore, it was unlawful. But the people were bound, because it was unlawful to begin with, to reject God and elect Saul at the very beginning. But they're allowed to do those mistakes. But they're not allowed to do those mistakes without impunity, because they will institute these governments, and they will do it even against the advice of God, because God says, if you're going to do this through Moses, he said, you got to put these five things in an agreement and read it to this king every day. And those five things, we go over that in contracts, covenants, and constitutions. I don't know any constitution ever written by any government that has all five. As a matter of fact, it is rare to find a constitution that even has one, at least from my experience. So, but anyway, we're going to take this conversation in over the next few weeks, and we'll do at least half of every conversation that we do during the day. For broadcasting, we will do it here on a recording on what we call Blog Talk or Straight Talk. And you can find out more about that at livingnetwork.org or hisholychurch.org or at preparingyou.com. And so you can hear at least the first half there. But one of the quotes that I was going to bring up is Matthew 6:6 on today's topic, because it says, but thou, when thou prayest, enter into thy closet. And when thou hast shut thy door, pray to thy Father which is in secret. And thy Father which seeth in secret shall reward thee openly. So that's kind of an interesting statement. And we see this word closet there. And the word closet isn't always translated closet. It's also translated storehouse and secret chamber. And it actually means a storage chamber or storeroom. You know, we kind of think of it as our prayer closet, but it's talking about going into some sort of storeroom. That's what the word actually means. And, you know, it's a contraction. But anyway, we see it in other places. We see it in Matthew 24, 26. Wherefore, if they shall say unto you, behold, he is in the desert, go not forth. Behold, he is in the secret chambers. That's that word closet again. Believe it not. And so we see in Matthew, in two places in Matthew, they use the same word. In one place they say closet, in another place they say secret chamber. And it means kind of a storeroom. But they're talking about you going inside. And of course, we know the kingdom of heaven is within. But we also know that men are possessed of the devil, according to the Bible. Whatever that means, to be possessed of the devil. But demons can get in there and they have to be cast out. And they can make a home in you, the same as the Holy Spirit can make a home in you. So you can have evil in you. And of course, we know evil can appear as good. So I have a question. Can the devil answer prayers? There's a question. Can the devil answer prayers? Well, I mean, you could pray to me. You could pray to the government. You could pray to the courts. You know, the first time I ever saw that phraseology in court papers for a neighbor who was being sued by another neighbor, and that one brought me the papers of the court, and it says, we pray to the court. It was his application to the court to get justice, which is what Jesus lists as one of the weightier matters, justice. And they were praying to the court for justice. And that kind of just shocked me, you know. I mean, I understood it, but it was just so bold. You know, see, we think the only place you pray is in church. Of course, and here we see in Matthew, Jesus is talking about praying in your storehouse, in your closet. Well, where's your storehouse? Where's your stuff? Where do you keep your stuff? Where do you keep the right to own your stuff? Is that in you or is that invested in somebody else? Do you have one purse? Because the Bible talks about one purse. Having one purse with all kinds of other people where everybody has a common storehouse. And he says it runs to evil in Proverbs. It talks you about that. Read Proverbs 1 and Proverbs 10. And it tells you consent not with these ones who want to have one purse, because they run to evil. It's their own blood that will be shed. And, of course, that's the principle we were talking about at the beginning of the show, where, you know, the brothers of Joseph thought they were getting rid of Joseph by throwing him into bondage, and what they were actually doing is bringing themselves into bondage. They would end up going into bondage themselves, because they threw their brother into bondage. Now, it wasn't a bondage like we consider slavery. Some people consider slavery. It was burdensome. As a matter of fact, you know, when you talk about the mark of the beast, they talk about the mark of the beast being burdensome, full of labors. And they were full of labors into crafts of state. The burden became heavier and heavier and heavier for the Israelites in Egypt. So much so that they started aborting their children because they were taxed not only on themselves, but they were taxed on their children. You know, they had to pay 20% of everything they earned for themselves, and now they also had to carry the burden of their children on top of that. And so people were actually aborting their children because of the financial strain. Today in the world, most abortions are the result of financial pressure upon families and individuals. Now, a lot of the abortions has to do with individuals who aren't even married, which is another aspect we see in the corruption of Rome. And this was actually going on in Egypt where people weren't getting married. And there was this, the purpose of intercourse between man and woman was to produce children. And that purpose is natural. But people have perverted the natural use to just want to have fun. Of course, the repercussion of that is to have children out of wedlock. And that became common in the thinking of the people. So you see, these things that happened way back then are not so remote. They're happening now. There was almost a total cessation of marriage. First, there was a lot of divorce, and then people would get married 2, 3, 4, 5 times, like the woman at the well that Jesus was dealing with. She'd been married 5 times, and she considered that she had no husband, because she never really had a husband, because there was always these, you know, like getting married was so that you had a date on Friday night. And of course, that's what's happening today. The purpose, the natural purpose is kind of overthrown because the purpose now is selfish. Now, all these things will be tied together in the programs ahead. But the point is that people created a system where they all have one purse and somebody has a right to their purse strings. When they created the golden calf and Moses told the people that this was bad and they were to not put all their money in that central bank, which is what the golden calf was, but to put the money on their person, in their own purse, not one purse, but every man had a right to his stuff, his possessions, his family. They belonged to him. His family was his storehouse. Now, there was another social storehouse that they created, which was the congregations of record, where they divided themselves into every family was a member of a 10-family congregation. But that wasn't corporate. That was just free assemblies, because all the offerings that they paid into that corporate closet was free will offerings. They never gave the power to their Levites to force them to contribute like they did with Saul. Saul had the power to do that, but he sinned against God when he did it. Same as when David instituted a draft, that was a sin against God, but it was legal because he was king, because they had chosen to elect a king who could exercise authority one over the other. Jesus was not that kind of king. And when he appointed the apostles as princes of his kingdom, I appoint unto you a kingdom, but you are not to be like the princes of the Gentiles. They were forbidden to exercise authority one over the other. And, you know, many years ago, 1,000 years ago, the church started crowning men as kings, you know, or at least what was posing as the church started crowning men as kings. I mean, William the Conqueror was crowned by church archbishop. Other people who, you know, like popes were crowning kings way back, and Pippin and all that stuff. Well, those kings were exercising authority, taxing the people, and then they would give a share of that money to that church in support of that church. I mean, that's what Lady Godiva is all about, and that's why we talk about Lady Godiva in the book, The Free Church Report. As a matter of fact, we have her picture, Lady Godiva's picture, on the front cover of The Free Church Report. And you can see it on our website at hisholychurch.org. So you can go there and you can check that out. See a picture of Lady Godiva. You may be disappointed, but I hope not. I hope you are enlightened as to why we would do such a thing. But that whole dispute was over the fact that they were going to tax the people to support the church. We're not allowed to do that. The church can't take funds from the government that exercise authority one over the other. The ministers of the church can never do that. As soon as they start doing that, they are no longer the church. And that's just the way it is. I mean, that's because who started the church? If we're going to be talking about his church, his holy church, Christ's holy church, you can't be doing that. So where do you pray? Where is your closet? Where is your storage closet? Is it in the kingdom of God? In the communion of mankind, in the communion of other people seeking the righteousness of God, trying to live by faith, hope, and charity and the perfect law of liberty? Or is your storehouse in the world with one purse? Because you can go to them and you can pray for benefits, what you need, but you can also pray in your heart, inside yourself, to the spirit that dwells in there. Now, in your heart, remember when Jesus cast out demons, he warned the people about changing their way, because if they don't, they will be fit habitations for more demons to come in and take over and devour them. So this is a question. Can the devil answer prayers? Can the devil dwell in you, appearing as the Holy Spirit, answer prayers and expand the size of your church? Because we know there were gathering places, synagogue of Satan, synagogue of the adversaries, where they thought they were praying to God and that Moses knew them and that the Messiah would know them, but they were actually adversaries of God. Why? Because their synagogues depended on not free will offerings, but the forced offerings of kings. See, this is why Herod set up baptism and signing up for a system of Corban. That's what he did. You could actually get baptized by Herod and his priests, and then you'd be signed up by the scribes to be a member of a system of social welfare called Corban sacrifice. And they would provide benefits. If you were blind or you're indigent, they would help you out according to statutory regulations. They would redistribute the wealth because they were one purse. Everybody, they had a right. If you didn't pay in, they could come and punish you. So they were the synagogue of saints. They were the adversaries of Christ. They hated Christ. But how does this have to do with resist no evil? Well, see, you become compatible with evil when you take up the ways of evil. Now, back to what we started with. What if you were stopped by police and it ends up that they beat you? Are you responsible for any of that? Could you be responsible? Did you resist evil when they did this? Now, I'm not going to guarantee that that's the case, because sometimes God will withdraw his protection in order to teach you something. But a lot of times, and I could tell you story after story, and we will do it in another half of this show. We'll tell you a little bit about that. But we're going to equate this back to circles and how that works and how that will prayer circles. But that will be in the second half of this show. So we'll be right back in a moment to Keys of the Kingdom.
My name is Mark, and I'm from Melbourne in Australia, and I'm a minister in the church established by Jesus Christ more than 2,000 years ago. After reading the books published at hisholychurch.org, I realised that mainstream Christianity had taken a wrong turn by forgetting what Jesus said to do, to practice pure religion while remaining unspotted from the world. What does this mean, and how is this done exactly? You'll find out when you go to hisholychurch.org and discover what it truly means to love God and your neighbour as much as yourself. Join the Living Network at hisholychurch.org.
Have you ever looked at the things happening in the world today and felt that something just wasn't right, but couldn't put your finger on it? Have you ever heard the phrase, "God bless America," and wondered to yourself, "Does he really?" Or have you ever looked at the government's policies on things such as abortion or same-sex marriage and asked yourself, "How could they?" Or where are all the Christians voicing their outrage? These are hard questions that many people today ask themselves. But along with those hard questions come some very hard answers. Answers that you may never heard before, but nonetheless will answer these and other questions you may have. So if you're looking for answers, join us at hisholychurch.org. It's not what you might think, and it will open the heart and mind to a whole other world that you never even knew existed. It did for me and many others. I know it will for you as well. So join us as we seek the kingdom of God and his righteousness at hisholychurch.org.
The Creator is the God of the living, not the God of the dead. His kingdom was, is, and will be forever on earth as it is in heaven. Start by connecting and finding other kingdom-seeking families on the His Holy Church Living Network. Visit www.hisholychurch.org to start your journey back to your unalienable birthright.
I'm Brother Justice, and I'm a minister of His Holy Church of Sacramento, California. His Holy Church is a powerful weapon in the hands of God. The books, The Covenants of the Gods, and Thy Kingdom Come has changed the course of my life forever. For those of you who are truly looking for the way, I encourage you to look to His Holy Church at www.hisholychurch.org. May the good Lord bless you and keep you.
Hi, I'm Brent. I'm a contact minister for the Living Network in Northeast Missouri. You're not the only one out there with the desire to learn the truth. There are people all over the world coming together in faith, hope, and charity. Join us at one of the upcoming gatherings to meet new people, fellowship, work, and play. Whether it's the Fall Burning Bush Festival in Oregon or the Spring Gathering in Northeast Missouri, you'll get all the details when you join the Living Network. Go to hisholychurch.org and click on the network link. Find out what you've been missing. You'll be glad you did.
Well, welcome back to Keys of the Kingdom. I'm Brother Gregory, and we're talking about closets and prayers and demons and God and all these things, but we're also talking about social structures and ways of operating as a society, as a free society, as a society in bondage, because this is what the Bible talks about. We're talking about law and justice and mercy and faith, and we're talking about liberty and rights that come from God, because that's what the Bible talks about. I'm not interested in your government. I'm interested in God's government. I don't want to change your government. I don't even want to change you. I want you to change, but I want you to decide. I want you to consent to the ways of the Lord and follow the ways of the Lord, and not just follow the ways of demons and the adversaries of the Lord, because that's what most Christians are doing. I read the other day where somebody quoted Galatians 1:4, who said, who gave himself for our sins that he might deliver us from the present evil world according to the will of God and our Father, to whom be the glory forever and ever. Amen. And he says, I'm just visiting here, meaning the planet, I guess, and life here, but my home is in heaven. Not so. You misinterpret the Bible with your private interpretation. The word world there is the word aeon, age. And when he's talking about deliver us from the present evil, he's talking about the evil in our time. He's not talking about abandoning the planet. And when Jesus says, my kingdom's not of the world, he uses a particular word that means constitutional order and system of government. And he's talking to Pilate, who's trying to sit in the judgment seat and judge Jesus Christ as a ruler of Rome, which Jesus has no treaty with. And he says, my kingdom is not of your constitutional order and system of government. That's the way the word is defined, even in your Strong's Concordance. But if I say world, you think planet. His kingdom was at hand. He was a king. The apostles said there is another king, one Jesus. They did contrary to the decrees of Caesar, because that was a separate government. And he also understood, as Moses understood, as the Bible tells us over and over again, that if you make men your benefactor and they exercise authority, they'll get to exercise authority over you. But if they're not your benefactor, if they exclude you and say, you can't have any of our benefits because you're not a part of our social welfare scheme, then they don't have authority over you. But if you sign up and you're in debt, you can't just walk out. All this has to do with law, justice, mercy, and faith. You can't make up your own rules. The rules already exist in nature, in the law of nature, and nature's God. And your parents can sell you into bondage. And they have. So you should be forewarned. Now, if you go read in Luke, let's go read Luke chapter 12. In the meantime, when there were gathered together an innumerable multitude of people, insomuch that they trod upon one another, this is a big crowd, he began to say unto his disciples, first of all, beware ye of the leaven of the Pharisees, which is hypocrisy. So what's leaven? Leaven is hypocrisy. It may be more than that, but it's hypocrisy. And actually, There has many levels to leaven. How do you put leaven into bread, into dough, and you knead it up, and it sits there, and it's a little loaf there sitting on the table, and you come back 20 minutes later, and it's a big loaf on the table. That's what leaven does. It makes a little loaf into a big loaf. But does it weigh anymore? Is it more bread? No, it's less. Same amount of bread. As a matter of fact, some of the nutrients have probably been eaten up by the yeast. And yet, but there's still minerals there and stuff like that, because the yeast doesn't change the mineral content, but it does change some of the sugar content into something else. And it gives off a gas, and that causes the bread to rise. And the bread looks like more bread in volume, but in weight, it's the same. So that's what they mean by leaven. These are the characteristics of leaven. So you say, well, you got twice as much bread now that you had before. That's hypocrisy. It's not true. You don't have more. So do you know in society, in the world today, is there anything that they make you think you have more when you actually have no more, but it just appears that you have more? You have no more value, no more weight, but it appears you have more. Well, actually, the money system that you have. You print up paper representing gold and silver originally. You know, it was legal tender and could be exchanged for lawful money. Well, lawful money was gold and silver and copper. That was lawful money, but the paper note was legal tender. So over here you have a pile of gold and silver, and over here you have a pile of notes that represent that gold and silver. And you're spending both of them in the same economy. So you appear to have more money, but you actually have the same amount of money, same amount of cash. Because if you go back to 1800s, coins were considered cash. Notes were not considered cash. If you tried to pay with a note, they say, no, cash only. We will accept cash only. So, well, these are notes. I know, that's right. Notes are not cash. Notes are a promise to pay cash, which is coin. That's the way the words were used back there in the 1800s, late 1800s. But now we've changed the meaning of words. So now we think that air in a bread, and so now that's how you get Wonder Bread. You know, remember how you used to be able to do that? You take Wonder Bread, big, huge, long loaf of Wonder Bread, you know, 16 inches long maybe. And you could squish it down until it was not much bigger than a sandwich. Because that's all the bread that was actually there. Everything else was air. You know, I heard an interesting statistic actually just last night about the guy who invented sliced bread. Remember how everybody says, that's the greatest invention since sliced bread. Well, I always wonder, what did they say before sliced bread? The greatest invention since the telegraph? Greatest invention since the train? Because the guy who invented sliced bread, you know, he had patents and everything on how to slice this bread. And it was a bust. Nobody cared. Nobody knew about it. Nobody wanted it. It wasn't until Wonder Bread that sliced bread started to become popular. It was because they were able to take this real airy loaf of bread that if you tried to slice with most people's knives in their kitchen, would have crushed it down to nothing because it was so airy and spongy. And, you know, it was almost like cake. It wasn't like real bread. But anyway, they invented a way to slice it evenly without crushing it. And they made sliced bread. And so that was really good because if you're going to make that airy bread that you could squish it with a knife, you needed to have it pre-sliced. There's an old movie, Hue and Cry, and they have a loaf of bread on the table, and they're cutting it off, and you can see they're sawing through it. It's a chunk of bread. It's hard. You know, it has a soft inside, but that outside crust allowed you to saw through with a big butcher knife, and you could cut it. But you couldn't do that with Wonder Bread unless it's pre-sliced. And that's what made sliced bread famous is Wonder Bread. But it's full of air, you see, because it has the leaven of the Wonder Bread people, which is actually a different kind of bacteria. changed the way in which they even made bread, which is leading to a lot of health problems, which is another whole issue. But the fact is that's the principle of the leaven of the Pharisees, to make you think you have more money than you really have, but it actually cuts the value of the money. Now, somebody put up on Facebook, and I saw my son liked it, that he pointed out that, you know, minimum wage back in, I think it was the 50s or, you know, pre-64 anyway, was, you know, I think it was 5 quarters, but they were silver quarters. And you could sell those 5 silver quarters now for $23. So based on the value of those 5 quarters that was a part of minimum wage, which would be $1.50, minimum wage today should be $22.30. So we don't need to fix the minimum wage. We need to fix the money system. Why is it like that? Because we have the leaven of the Pharisees. That's what we have today in our money system. And that actually was taking place back then at that time too. It wasn't pervasive at the time of Christ, but shortly thereafter it was. By the time of Nero, it was so pervasive that, he took, I think, 40% of the silver out of the silver coin, the silver denarii. And inflation started. A sack of wheat, a modius of wheat, they call it a modius of wheat, to be about 30 pounds of wheat, which would make about 30 pounds of flour, which would make about 30 one-pound loaves of bread, because that's the weight. But if you puffed them up, you could, you know, with a lot of yeast and everything, you could probably fill up, you know, 60 bread loaves, all looking like a pound loaf, but they're actually half-pound loaves because of the fact they're full of air. So anyway, that's the principle. But it only cost you 6 denarii, which is like 50 cents. For the whole sack of wheat, 50 cents for 30 pounds. So that was a pretty good price. But by Diocletian, it cost you 120,000 denarii for the same sack of wheat. Now 120,000 denarii. What was the difference? The denarii by then was iron coin, or even clay coin. They even went to clay coin for a while. And this started with things like, I'm trying to remember the word, but it's like terracotta. It's terracotta money. It's clay. It's tokens. And they're little coins. And they would have a stamp on them and they'd be baked. And the people would use them as if they were money. You know, it's like you use Federal Reserve notes or English pound notes and all these paper notes that are circulating all over the world as if they were cash. And you even call them cash now. But they're promises. They're not real. They're the air, and they can double the money supply without actually doubling the money supply, because the money supply is over here, this actual valuable commodity. And there's other aspects to that, but it's not really the subject matter. But anyway, so when you see him talking, beware of the leaven of the Pharisees, which is hypocrisy, because your notes are really hypocrisy. They aren't redeemable in lawful money. That used to be printed on them, and they've taken that part off. And for a while, they were still redeemable in lawful money, but not for the citizenry, because the citizenry were surety for the debt. After 1933 in the United States, the U.S. citizen became a surety for the debt. And so that's actually, you know, if you don't understand all that, you're going to have to listen to some of the other shows, but that's the way the law works. And so anyway, but even in 1970, I was trying to think of what year it was. Well, actually, even back in 1964, 65, gold was like 70-some dollars an ounce, I think it was. And the Sheikh of Saudi Arabia could come over here and for a $20 bill, or basically a $20 bill, he could get an ounce of gold. He'd have to pay a little bit more than $20 because there's a minting charge. But if he was taking it in bulk, he could probably get it for, you know, a $20 bill could get him an ounce of gold. Well, if you went out to buy an ounce of gold, it would cost you about $76, $77. But see, he was a sovereign of a nation. And those are international exchange notes. So he was sucking in the gold. But he too was fooled by his own greed. And they eventually overextended themselves, thinking that this would come about forever, and then it eventually collapsed on them. See, the money system has already collapsed. They're just propping it up. And that's why, you know, you see these, instead of $22 for minimum wage, you're making whatever it is now, eight. It's different in different parts of the country. You're making half of what minimum wage should be by 1960 standards. So your standard of living is dropping. That's why the middle class is almost gone in America. It's because you accepted the leaven of the Pharisees. You accepted puffed up value that really wasn't there. And you were blind to the truth. So anyway, he said, beware of the leaven of the Pharisees. But he goes on to say, for there is nothing covered that shall not be revealed, neither hid that shall not be known. And so now you're beginning to find out that notes are not really having any value. They are only promises, and all men are liars, and people have lost their homes and their life savings. And at the beginning of this program, the money in your pocket had a certain value, and at the end of this program, it has less value. Nobody picked your pocket, but the value in your pocket is disappearing rapidly. And we've become absolutely addicted to the stimulation of that economy. So they just keep stimulating it to keep it propped up. And we're going to tie all this together with everything down to the serotonin in your blood. We're going to show you how this works eventually so that you put all this together, because this is all part of a series. But anyway, it goes, therefore, whatsoever ye have spoken in darkness shall be heard in the light. Now, darkness is whatever you have done and you did not understand. It doesn't matter that you understood it or not, as far as the result. And that result will be revealed in the light. So even though that, you know, like people talk about auditing the Federal Reserve, and I really don't care whether you audit it or not, but I think it's fine if you want to try to get it audited, great. That might bring some light to the subject. But we want to get at the root cause of the problem. The root cause of the problem is not the leaven of the Pharisees. It's the fact that there is greed in your heart. You could not see the problem because you were compatible with the evil. You did not really love your neighbor as much as you loved yourself. You say, I can use this to get what I want, even though it's going to cost somebody down the road. Somebody's going to have to pay the piper down the road. And in our book, The Covenants of the God, that's what we have on that cover. We have Lady Godiva on the cover of the Free Church Report, but we have the Pied Piper on the cover of the Covenants of the Gods. And so there's a reason for that, because there's a piper you will have to pay. And what happened in that story? The people paid with their children. You curse your children with the debt of your own greed. You wanted your benefits. You didn't want to actually pay substance, pay the debt. You cashed your gold and silver into the civil authorities of the world, and they sold you out. And now you have no value in your pocket. Some of you are going out and trying to buy gold and silver and hedge against the runaway inflation that's inevitable. Eventually, it's inevitable. But I tell you, you need to put treasure up for yourself in God's storehouse, treasures in the kingdom of God. You need to change your ways, you know, because you store up gold and silver, and that's still not, you know, I always point out that during mass starvations, which happen in China every few hundred years, all the gold in China will not buy the last bowl of rice in China. It will lose its value when there is nothing to eat. Nobody will want it. But I'm not against, you know, having things like that. But the fact is, U.S. citizens, they can have gold in their possession, but they only have a legal title. And if you don't know what that means, you got to go read Covenants of the Gods. There's another book, Contracts, Covenants, and Constitution. But Covenants of the Gods will tell you that chapter on law versus legal. And you can read it all online for free. Yeah, you don't even have to buy a book. It's for free. But the truth is never for free. It will cost you. It will cost you your delusions. But anyway, Therefore, whatsoever ye have spoken in the darkness shall be heard in the light. Whatever you have done in the darkness, done in your blindness, being an ostrich doesn't save you. And that which ye have spoken in the ears, in the ear, in closets, shall be proclaimed upon the housetops. And of course, that's what we're doing. We're telling you what you've done wrong. But we're eventually going to get around to why you were fooled. Because you need to know that. It's not enough to know that you were fooled. You need to know the why of how you were fooled. The why is very important. It's not as important as the who, but we'll talk more about that too when we get into more of circles within circles, like the golden circle. Right now we're talking about prayer circles. See, you're in a prayer circle when you're applying to men who call themselves benefactors but exercise authority. That's the prayer circle you're in. And see, you cannot serve two masters. You need to know the whole gospel so that you follow Christ. You can't, if you follow Christ and you follow Caesar, and Caesar's going in the opposite direction of Christ, doing the opposite of what Christ said, you will be tore to shreds because they're not going the same way. They're going different ways. Christ had a way. Caesar had a way. You need to be able to tell the difference between those two. So you're making agreements every day in the closet of Caesar's all over the world. And that's going to come to light. And it's coming to light now, which is why you see all the problems. Rome fell. The decline and fall of the Roman Empire fell for a reason. And it's amazing. All the reasons it fell are prevalent in the world today and all the governments of the world. Now, when we say of the world, we're not talking about of the planet again. We're talking about where Jesus says, my kingdom is not of that world, of Rome. It's on the planet. It's at hand. It was appointed to the apostles. They were told how to minister to it, not administer to it, but to minister to it, because it operated by faith, hope, and charity in the perfect law of liberty, which required that the people give. And we're going to go back to that several different ways. We're not just going to give you pieces of the puzzle. We're going to give you the whole 2,000-piece, 5,000-piece puzzle. And we're going to put these pieces together in this series on Resist Not Evil so that you begin to understand. I told you before the break, I was in a situation where I'd come across, I tried to cross the Canadian border, and actually it was in the middle of the night, and they turned myself and my brother back. My brother had had his wallet stolen, and so he didn't have it on him. A pickpocket had stole it. Later on, it came back to the house empty of all the money, but the guy actually mailed it back after he took all the money out. Now, maybe it wasn't pickpocketed. Maybe the guy just actually found it and took the money out for himself. But my brother seemed to think that it was pickpocketed. But anyway, he didn't have it. So he didn't have his ID. And we stopped at a gas station. It's like 3 o'clock in the morning. And I went over to see if I could get into this store that was down the street just a little ways. I mean, I could still see everybody at the gas station. And when I was on my way back, I saw that police car had pulled up in the gas station. Evidently, the people at the border who turned us back because my brother didn't have all his ID had come up and were kind of heavy-handedly talking to my brother, you know, questioning him. And he didn't have the ID to give them. We actually had his birth certificate and stuff like that. We had stopped and got that, but we hadn't got the other ID yet that you normally carry. This is way back in the 60s. This isn't like now. It's much worse now. But anyway, I could see them pulling out their billy clubs, and I thought, like, oh my gosh, what's going on there? You know, I couldn't hear what they were saying. But they were getting rather upset. Maybe my brother was a little tired or something. But anyway, I showed up, and suddenly they put their billy clubs back. But they were insisting that he ride with them to the police station to get this all sorted out. And it wasn't very far. We were in Sault Ste. Marie. And so I drove our car, an old 57 Dodge station wagon, and he rode with the police. And then I got there, and I came in. I had to park in the parking lot and came in. And they were still kind of upset, and there were a lot more cops now. And And so I started talking to them. And they were talking to my brother, and they were talking to me. And then we had to go out and get some more ID. And, you know, we had some bank accounts, and we were showing our names was on that, and envelopes in the car and all this kind of stuff to show that our name was on that and that we weren't heinous criminals. Anyway, within 10, 15 minutes, they were serving me donuts anyway, and I guess my brother could get some too. And they ended up giving us a police escort to find a campground because it was really foggy. You couldn't see hardly anything. And they were all really nice. And they were going out of their way for us. And this has been the story for years. I know guys who left their teeth in the South. I drove to the South at the same time. Back in the 60s, probably 67, 1967, and long hair, because that's too cheap to get it cut, California license plates. We were stopped. One state, we were stopped like three times. We drove all through the night, and the cop would come up behind, look in the window, pull back behind us, and pull us over. For what? Long hair and California plates. I guess that's a crime in the South. But anyway, we were pulled over, we were stopped on the side of the road, and he pulled over in Louisiana in, I think it was Baton Rouge. And a cold front came in. It was just freezing cold. And anyway, he was rude, you know. Wanted to see ID. I pull out my wallet. He grabs my wallet, takes money out of my wallet. Everything was cash. We didn't have credit cards or anything in those days. So he starts pulling the bands off the money that's in the wallet, you know, which we had taken out to take this trip. And I thought, like, what the heck? You know, I thought that was surprising. But I was just observing it. I didn't get angry. I wasn't upset. I'm not going to do like, see, when you're a cop, and I've wore a badge later on, you put on this kind of front of aggression. Because you never know if somebody's going to spit in your face or pull a gun out or whatever. And it's a defensive mechanism. Now, if you go push against that, they will push back. You push against it more, they will push back. It's not really the way a cop should be, but they are that way because of the emotional defense that they need in order to carry out their job. And they shouldn't be that way. There's a better way. And that's what we're always talking about. And if you get down on that level with them, they'll beat the tar out of it sometimes. And if you get bad cops, they'll kill you. But anyway, 10 minutes with this guy. And we had to have a gas station come. That's why we're stuck on the side of the road and help us get started. And we had a hot wire short in the car. Long story short, he worked on that car, that cop, in his uniform, with this freezing cold summer uniform, with a freezing cold front coming in. I mean, it was cold and chilly. He crawled around under our car, crawled around under our dashboard, worked hard, and found our hot wire short, finally, that was in the dome light. Fixed our car for us, didn't charge us anything, and was the sweetest guy. But he started out, he was going to beat us up. You know, I mean, he was going to run us in. And, you know, they didn't always run us in, but they always were very belligerent. But this guy, same way, but after he was with us, he lost all his power, because you resist not evil, and they don't have any power. You give them the power. You throw gas on their fire. So anyway, we're going to talk more about this and how this all fits together, and we'll start back again with Luke 12, and we'll explain it next time on Keys to the Kingdom. And so until then, may peace be upon your house, and may God be with you. God bless.
You have been listening to The Keys of the Kingdom with Brother Gregory of His Holy Church. For more information on the educational ministry provided by His Holy Church and Brother Gregory, including services, counseling, lectures, books, and other audio materials, please write to His Church at Summer Lake, Box 10, Summer Lake, Oregon, 97640. You can also find us on the web at www.hisholychurch.net.